This is Sandra Hale. I'm interviewing Lara Deeb in my house in Culver City on the 16th of December, 2019. And we're going to talk about the Association for Middle East Women's Studies. Just chat about it.
Okay.
But I suppose it would help people who are listening to have you talk a little bit about your background. Why don't you push it off?
So academic?
Yeah, academic. Well, anything you want to say, of course.
Okay, so I work in the fields of cultural anthropology and women's studies and Middle East studies. So my research has been primarily in Lebanon. And then later in the U.S. about how U.S. academia intersects with the politics of U.S. interventions in the Middle East and Zionist politics in particular. And then I guess in terms of women's studies, it's my first project that is most directly in the field of gender studies, where I did research looking at Shia women's in Beirut's participation in public life in relationship to their ideas around gender justice. And I also, I guess my first job was in a women's studies department.
Oh, so, at Irvine?
At Irvine, mm-hmm. At Irvine, before I moved to anthropology at Scripps.
So. Are we sure that you can be heard?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I can see the little thing moving.
All right.
They can edit that out too.
Well, we've been asked, Nancy Gallagher and I are co-chairing this AMUS project on oral history. We wanted to get different views about AMUS's history, not just one narrative. Because I've actually heard two stories about how AMUS was founded. And I just think it's interesting to have people talk about those two, or give us those two stories. And so that's just one thing, and then there are a whole bunch of other things. But this is me interviewing you, not me talking, so let me go on. So that's why, that's what the project is. And so it's not that we're so interested in dates and that sort of thing, because there are people that are...
Good, I don't remember them.
Yeah. Well, there are people that are keeping very close track of dates, I'm sure, going back and checking newsletters and that kind of thing. I tease Nancy because she didn't want to be interviewed until she reviewed. And I said, I'm not going to review. I'm just going to say that I don't remember such and such date. I don't remember the year that I entered. I mean, I could reconstruct it probably from something I told you earlier. But in the sense of a date, but what provoked you to go to, say, your first meeting or whatever?
So I don't remember exactly, but I think what likely happened is I was, my first Mesa was in, I'm doing math in my head. Summer 97? Hmm. Fall 97 would have been my first Mesa, and I was a graduate student still at the time. And I don't know if that was my first AMUS, however one says it, meeting. But in the 90s, my best guess is that either you, Sandra, or Saad, who was after 1999 was on my committee, suggested it to me. And I know that I had always found Mesa to be as compared to the AAA at the time, I found Mesa to be a more sexist space. Mm-hmm. And it certainly was more than it is today. At least this past Mesa was fantastic. So I think I was also looking for a space for feminism at Mesa. And it might have also been Nadine Never who I knew at that point, who brought me in. So somebody I knew basically suggested that I go. And I think I didn't go to Mesa all that often, but when I went to Mesa, at least in the late 90s and in the early 2000s, I would try to go to the Muse meeting, mostly because, again, it was at first one of the few feminist spaces at Mesa that I saw.
No, I agree with you about Mesa, but the worst place in terms of conferences that I've ever, the worst organization I've ever encountered was the AAA.
Yeah.
And I stopped going. I mean, that's why I haven't gone for years. I'm sure it's very, very different. But now I don't know anyone and I feel odd when I go.
Yeah.
Well, so I'd tried to bring, we'll go back to maybe the foundations and why you joined and how and what you thought it gave you, if anything. Well, maybe we'll go straight to that. Well, what do you think the field was like before AMUSE? Do you think AMUSE had any impact on the field, at least the little U.S. Part of the field?
Yes, is the short answer. And I also, like, I should say, there, right now I'm sort of speaking from my own experiences with the association, but then, you know, Jessica and I did this research around, not around AMUSE and Middle East Studies per se, but around Middle East anthropology, and I think that there is a relationship there that I did not review my notes on. So, but yeah, my sense is that, and, you know, you mentioned two origin stories for AMUSE earlier, and the one that I always heard, and I have no idea who told this to me, like one of the elders, or multiple, told me this story at some point, was this kind of, that AMUSE was founded as a kind of critical intervention after a particularly horribly sexist Mesa business meeting, and that women walked out of this meeting, women scholars and feminist scholars, and then founded AMUSE in response. Some people tell this story, at least one person told this story to me, saying that there was a belly dancer at the meeting or after the meeting or something like this, right? So that's my, so my sense is that so from that story, my sense is that prior to AMUSE, there was little space for feminist scholarship at Mesa. I don't have experiences of Mesa before this, so I don't know if that's true or not. And so that AMUSE really created a kind of space for feminist scholarship of the Middle East to take shape. My other sense is that it's the journal, right? The Journal of Middle East Women's Studies that, again, helped forge or carve out a space not only in Middle East studies for feminist studies, but also in women's studies in the U.S. for studies of the Middle East, because my sense, again, not having lived through this period of time in the field, but looking at sort of publications, is that, I think we have like Lila's 1990 article about at least anthropology of the Middle East, right? The sense that there were only very specific ways that women in the Middle East were allowed to enter conversations in women's studies, and that AMUSE or JMUSE would provide a forum for new conversations to take place in that field.
You know, I think that's a pretty good statement. About the origin stories, yes, I heard the belly dancing story, that women were just really up in arms, but nobody seems to be able to remember exactly who these women were. And Margot Bedran called me about something entirely different a few nights ago. We hadn't talked for ages, about something else. And so we started talking about this because Nancy is trying to figure out who was there so that we can interview those people. And Margot hesitated. I don't quite know why, because she was named as one of the people who was there. Maybe she just forgot, you know, it might not have been a big deal for her, but, and I'm sure she won't mind my saying that, but we will go, I'll go back to her with that subject. But I guess B.J. Furnia was there, and I can't, and Nancy. But there were, I guess, more women than that who met out in the hall and said, we have to do something about this. And then Sawad, I'm sure when Sawad is interviewed, she'll tell us about her version of the foundation of AMUSE. And one of the things that, I just want to say, one of the things that she told me was, she said, do you remember Mirga? You know, Middle East research, I can't remember anymore now, but it was anthro and research and Middle East. So in many ways, it was a forerunner of the anthro of the Middle East. And then she told me a story about how it became eventually, you know,
institutionalized into the Middle East section.
Yeah. And there was a pretty good newsletter. I remember that and the editorship was passed around, and that worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. I edited, I don't know, one or two issues. And I'd forgotten about that when I thought about my early years in AMUs, that I'd already had some experience. And even though it wasn't feminist, there were a lot of women in Mirga.
And that newsletter is actually available through the Claremont Library System right now. Online. So if you ever want to look back at the issues, there's PDFs of all of them.
Yeah, I'd like to look back. I don't even remember, and I'm not sure I have the issues that I edited or co-edited. Oh my, how we do forget our history. So you said it had some impact on the field, that it created a feminist space, but there are, you know, different feminists, and there has been. Oh, you wanted to talk about the journal. Let's go back to the journal, and then we'll go on with AMUs. Foundation of the journal was not without conflict, as you know.
I know. Although, again, like I came into this after all of that. Right, so these are histories that I've heard but didn't directly experience. So my first direct experience with this journal was when I was doing the book reviews and you and Nancy were the editors, which I experienced as a very smooth process. And you know,
we along fine.
Right, we worked well, and the journal was doing really interesting things at the time. And so I don't know much about the processes or the politics of it from prior or even after. I got to experience maybe a golden era or a good moment in the journal's history. But I think it's about, again, I think IGMIS has also changed a lot recently, but I think my sense is that at the time that JMUS was founded, IGMIS wasn't publishing as much feminist work as it does today. Mm-hmm. And journals like Feminist Theory, Feminist Studies weren't publishing as much work about the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not sure that they actually are doing much more of that, right? So that's, I think JMUS was actually providing a forum for publication and for research and scholarship that wasn't accessible or wasn't available anywhere else.
And also bringing women in, perhaps, if not into AMUs, just into something we could call a feminist space. When I looked at the last two or three issues, I didn't recognize a whole lot of the people there, which is a very good sign. I have the impression that they're younger people. I don't mean to be an ageist, but younger people, and mainly people either of Middle Eastern descent or from the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really pleased about that.
And that seems to me to be a shift in the sites of knowledge production also. Right, because my sense is also that more scholars who are based in the Middle East are also publishing, or based outside the U.S. are also starting to publish in it, which I think makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that in terms of the editorship, the first editor wasn't quite so concerned with identity politics. Mm-hmm. Nancy and I were, but I don't think that at that point we were very successful at getting people from the Middle East. We could use our own networks, but Sudanese are notoriously non-productive in terms of publication. The ones that are productive are here in the States or in Britain. But anyway, then it went back to the first editor, who, as I said, was not that interested in identity politics. She really, I think, doesn't believe in it. But then, when it went to Duke, my goodness, what a change. Mm-hmm. And even though, no, I'm talking too much. I just wanted to be a, you know, add little things here and there. But yeah, I agree with you about the how Jamie's has really had quite an influence. Well, let's go back to Amuse and see if we can say a little bit more about that and about the people who, not specifically people, I mean not specific people, who have been active in it and how you see that. When we look at the past presidents, and you probably can't remember, remember them, because, you know, I forget. You're so accomplished in your field that I forget that you're as young as you are and that I met you when you were still a student.
I was a grad student, so I was oblivious to a lot of, I'm sure there were politics going on in the room. I could guess at some of them, but I really didn't know what was going on.
I remember us having lunch or whatever, it was probably Mesa, and you're saying that you just wanted to get to know me because something or other, and I thought, why does she get to know me? Why does she want to know me? And I thought that was a pretty positive thing. We had a very nice conversation.
I had written a review of your book.
Ah, okay.
And I really liked it.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you. It's nice to get that comment almost two decades later, but not quite. 1996, I think it was published. Yeah. So you were still a grad student when you wrote that review.
Yeah, it was co-authored with one of my former advisors.
Well, what are the, I mean, if someone in the street said to you, there's this feminist organization, I don't know that everybody in it self-identifies as feminist, by the way, but that term, Sudanese women are suddenly calling themselves feminist, and it's shocking to me in this uprising, but even before the uprising. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's not such a bad word. But where was I? Do you remember? I was meandering through getting up to a question.
You would ask me, so you said something about the earlier leadership of the organization and the people who had been involved. And then we got distracted by the fact that I was a grad student when all of this was being started up and I don't know anything. And then...
Yeah, in terms of the presidents and the early people that were involved, do you have an impression?
All right, this is what I'll say. So first of all, I think I often wasn't quite sure who in the room. So I didn't go to that many Amy's meetings, right? Because especially once I was on the market, I was going to the AAA for all the market-related reasons. So there was a period of time where I didn't go to Mesa at all. And later, when I would go back to Mesa every, you know, 2 or 3 years maybe, and I would go to an Amy's meeting, I know that I was never, I can't remember who all of the people on the board were, for example. And I remember sometimes thinking that people were more involved and then learning that they weren't, but they'd just been there, or vice versa. So I don't actually know the specifics. But my sense is, and I also worked in a women's studies department for a while in the UC system, right? So my sense is that all of the politics and tensions between identity-based activism, experience-based knowledge production, methods like ethnographic methods, scholarship, being scholar activists, that I think transnational feminisms versus women of color, US-based, all of these kinds of tensions that you see in women's studies configurations anywhere were also tensions present in AMUs.
Yes.
Right? And so I think I had a sense of those tensions. I don't know who the specific actors were on the various sides, but it's also unsurprising that those tensions were present, right? Because it was also a women's studies space. Mm-hmm. And especially at that historical moment, those were the conversations happening in women's studies configurations. And so why wouldn't they be happening in AMUs as well?
Yeah. That was said very gracefully. But yes, of course, they would be there. And they were. They absolutely were. At times, it got so bad that it looked like the organization wouldn't survive it, you know, one of those great big cleavages that lots of organizations experience. But somehow or other, the organization pulled out of it. And I think for all of the criticism that that the organization's run by a clique, it's also more or less the clique who pulled the organization out of those struggles. Mm-hmm. Not entirely. You know, I told you that Val called me and asked me to play some intermediary between the big tension between Arab women and an Anglo-American woman, mm-hmm. about who owns the scholarship of the Middle East, who owns women's knowledge production, is the way I meant to say it. Mm-hmm. So yes, and there have been some, and JMU's caused some tension. Mm-hmm. Not only the foundation of JMU's, well, that went relatively smoothly. But then, with an early editor, some problems emerged. You know, we... Go ahead.
I think that the other... Oh, I've lost one of them. Well, the two other things that came to mind... Should I wait for the phone to stop?
You want to turn it off?
So two other things related to this that come to mind. One is that my sense, and if I can extrapolate from anthropology into other fields, there are significantly more scholars from the Middle East or Arab American, Iranian American, Turkish American, Middle Eastern American scholars, diaspora scholars, Hafi scholars, heritage scholars, whatever you want to call the categories. There's significantly more participating in U.S. academia today than there were, say, 30 or 40 years ago. So there's also a kind of shift in the relationship of identity to knowledge production that's happening on a larger scale, is my sense. So I imagine that that's also... I haven't been to an AMU's meeting in at least a decade. So again, I imagine it's changed a lot. I get the emails and I'm a member, but I haven't been to a meeting. So I get the sense that has also potentially changed the dynamics. And there was something else I was going to say, and now I can't remember what it was.
You'll think of it. Yeah. when I say this, I was really concerned when the two new organizations were founded, because I was afraid that, you know, Anthropologist of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I don't know the
at Mesa, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
And the Arab American.
Yeah.
I was so afraid that Saad said that she was trying to draw the anthropologists back in because so many like you and Nadine and so on were going to the AAA and skipping Mesa, not just skipping AMU's, and she thought it was a way to draw people back in. And you know, she may be right about the, and I may be wrong that it was going to take people away from AMU's, but it seems in fact to have created a little more excitement, although attendance was very bad this year.
I think it also has a lot to do with the politics of the organizations, right? So one of the things that Jessica and I found is that there was a moment when a lot of the Middle East anthropologists stopped going to the AAA, right? Because the AAA, for politics, after the 80s resolutions, and moved to Mesa. And then scholars of my generation were more likely to go to the AAA and stayed, and then especially when we were doing all the boycott work, right? We're very present at the AAA. And then after we lost the full organization vote, more of us started to go to Mesa. So there's a way in which I think we kind of flip organizations depending on where the conversations we want to be having seem to have a more welcoming home. Mm-hmm. And that is probably part of this too. But I don't think it would take away from AMU's. I think it's more the problem of anthropologists showing up at Mesa or not. Mm-hmm. The other thing I remembered what I was going to say is also, I think it's interesting that it's still called AMU's when so many of the women's studies department configurations I'm familiar with have shifted to gender studies or gender and sexuality studies or feminist studies. And I think that's why I was also thinking about it as a feminist space and not necessarily a women's studies space. But I think that that is another one of the tensions and conversations that for some people can make AMUs feel like a slightly older model of organizing academic knowledge production in the field.
Well, it's a very good statement. I think there are people that do gender studies and sexuality studies, of course, within AMUs, but I think your statement is quite accurate. I'm a little concerned about... Oh, we're okay.
We're fine.
Okay. And... Yeah, it's an older model in a whole lot of ways, not only because it's called Women's Studies, and even UCLA, with a former director that was holding on to Women's Studies and would not let go, and would not, every time the topic came up, and I was often one of the ones bringing it up, she would just dismiss it, and we weren't strong enough then, which, you know, people are now, within UCLA's gender studies, to carry it out anyway. And finally, someone, I don't think it was me, I think it was one of the new people, because I was by then, you know, had given up on that, suggested that we change our title. So of course, then we had about 2 weeks of meetings, what kind of title we wanted, whether sexuality should be a part of it, and so on. You know, the struggles you know are existing. But, you know, I wish we could have some of those struggles in our AMUs meetings. I mean, some of those discussions that would lead to struggles. But we don't. I don't think anyone has ever, no, I shouldn't say ever, but I think that no one that I remember has brought up changing our name, except maybe 10 years ago or more, when there was this issue of, but what about, does this title include Middle East Americans? And
interesting.
And nobody could come up with some title that wasn't really awkward. And I think we just like to say AMUs. You know, it's got a musical
sound. It's a nice
acronym. Yes, it is.
And you know, there's a really... I mean, I started off when we started talking about saying that to me it seems like it, at its moment of creation, but also in my experience of finding AMUs or being told about AMUs, it was like a feminist space within MESA. And today, I mean, like this fall 2019, I had an incredibly feminist experience at MESA. I felt like MESA was a completely different space and organization, but not because I was going to AMUs. Sessions, because in other kinds, there were sessions addressing, you know, feminist participation in the revolutions, or a number of sessions on queer organizing, right? So in some ways, I think MESA has also shifted so that its relationship with AMUs is also going to be a different one, right? It's no longer the only space or the primary space for this kind of scholarship, which I think is fantastic, right?
Yeah. You know, the, I had a point I was going to make, but I have lost my point. Oh, I was going to make a personal statement about how, you know, I was trained in African studies. And, you know, Gary was a Middle East geographer, and so that rubbed off on me a bit, so I was very interested and active in Palestinian issues. But my training was in African studies, and those were the panels I was on, and so on. But I was troubled about African studies because it was so white. And I was attracted to Middle East studies because it wasn't all, you know, white Anglo people. And that was really striking to me. But also I got invited to be on panels about Muslim women, and my, you know, Sudan work would fit in. although I don't fit in very well in Mesa, and therefore in AMUs because of Sudan studies, which is just totally neglected. When we finish with your interview or some other time, I'll tell you about my experience this year at Mesa, when, who was it?
McDashi.
Oh, McDashi, sorry. Called a meeting of...
Oh, I was there.
Oh, sorry.
I was sitting in that circle. We can talk about it after we turn this tape recorder
off. Yes, okay. I think I told you what I thought of it already, but I felt, again, you know, ignored as a Sudanist. Maybe if there had been a Sudanese there who had participated, it would have been different. Well, are there things that you thought I was going to ask or that you want to say or whatever about the group?
I think I've said everything.
No, you talk very fast, and you
I
get
do
a
talk
lot
fast,
in.
But I mean, again, I for me, like it's. I haven't been. I think there was a period of time I was more actively involved, and it was partially through the editor, the book review editorship. Mm-hmm. And recently, I haven't been as involved. Again, in part because my attentions were very much focused on the AAA and the BDS work there, so I just shifted away from Mesa altogether. So, but I, my sense is that AMUs was an important intervention and continues to be an important intervention in Mesa. But I don't have a very clear sense of what that looks like today just because I haven't been as present.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, you know, I think I've been pretty close to the leadership of AMUs for a lot of years, but I don't think I could respond to that question that you've just raised. You know, what do we have any? Have we outgrown? Has Mesa outgrown a separate space for feminism? And I think not yet.
Not yet. No, not yet. I'm still waiting to see if this year was a fluke or not. So we'll see. Jury's still out.
Yeah.
Can I turn this off?
Well, thank you for, I was very lucky that you were making this long drive anyway to Culver City from Pomona. So it's been, you know, a very, very interesting interview. I learned quite a bit.
You're welcome. It's been fun. I wish I had a better memory, but
no,
it's been interesting to think about this. I hadn't thought about this in a long time, so thank you. I look forward to seeing the final, all of them.